Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now though, Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs and Fine Gael TD for Wicklow, Simon Harris is here. You're welcome to the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Claire.
I know you've had a number of high-level meetings in relation to what's happening between Iran and Israel in recent days. What's your own view on where things stand at the moment? Do you think we're on the brink of regime change? Do you expect the Americans to go in? What are your thoughts?
So we couldn't be in a more dangerous situation. And I mean, we really all need to amplify the message about stepping back from the brink, because there's a number of risks, I think, in the next 24 to 48 hours. The risk of others getting involved, including the United States, and that remains unknown. We heard the comments of the President of the United States overnight. There's a risk of spillover beyond Iran and Israel. There's the huge reality that this is all overshadowing the urgent humanitarian need in Gaza and the fact that people are still dying and starving in Gaza as we speak. And then there's the massive effort at a European level to make sure we try to provide support to our own citizens and our own diplomats in what is becoming a really dangerous environment and a really difficult environment in which to operate from and function from as well.
Mm-hmm. So what is the latest on that, on the Irish citizens who are there? Can you get them out?
So we have around 29 Irish citizens in Iran, most of whom are in Tehran, and in addition to that, around 12 dependents. Now, it's important to say, in the case of Iran, most of these are long-term residents, many dual citizens. In Israel, we have around 200 on a register. But again, a lot of people have been living in Israel for a very long time. But a relatively small number of people in both Tehran, in Iran, and in Israel, who would like to leave if the opportunity arises for very understandable reasons. Yesterday, our embassies, and I really want to thank our incredible diplomats for the work they're doing. Yesterday, our embassies contacted all known Irish citizens who'd expressed an interest in this, and we're working through what we call the civil assistance mechanism, working with other EU member states to help people leave when it's possible and safe to do so. That will vary.
Because there are no flights, right?
Correct. No, so the airspace is closed. So it basically means at the moment in Iran, it means going over land border, which is not without risk. And from an Israeli point of view, it means going to maybe Jordan or Egypt, where obviously flights can go from. So there are a number of options available to us. We're working very closely with a number of member states. And we're also having to now, in a very serious way, also look at how we best support our diplomats, because the situation is deteriorating quite significantly in terms of being able to effectively operate in the country, and also obviously safety and security issues. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's ongoing. But going back to the EU position, which you touched on briefly there, what is it in relation to all of this? I mean, is the bloc telling Benjamin Netanyahu to stop the escalation?
Absolutely. I mean, the EU position is very clear. I attended an emergency meeting of EU foreign affairs ministers this week on Tuesday. I was in touch with Kaya Kallas, the High Representative of the European Commission, yesterday, and I'm in touch with a number of counterparts on an ongoing basis. And the position from an EU perspective is very straightforward. There needs to be an immediate de-escalation and a return to the talks programme. I mean, let's be very clear here. Nobody wants to see Iran with nuclear capabilities. Everybody is aware of the dangers that Iran poses. But at the same time, the way you resolve these issues is through the talks that were scheduled to take place and which were obviously ultimately postponed as a result of the Israeli incursion.
But it seems that the EU is something of a bystander here. Like, we have Britain deciding with their COBRA meetings what to do if the Americans go in. You know, it's a given that it is really in Donald Trump's gift as to whether he intervenes or not and makes a real difference. But what can the EU do?
Well, obviously the EU is made up of 27 member states, and I suppose that's the difference. But I mean, what the EU is doing through the High Representative and what we call the E3, Germany, France and the UK, is engaging very actively in trying to persuade the Iranians to get back into a talks and negotiation process. I think that's really crucial. If the Iranians aren't willing to engage directly with the United States at this moment in time, it's very important at a minimum they engage with the European Union. Their perspective seems to be that they won't engage in negotiations whilst, in their view, under attack. But actually, it's really important that negotiations start again. This situation It is almost impossible to overstate the potential danger of this if there ends up being involvement of other countries or indeed spillover into other countries. And like I say, Ireland, whilst far away in one way, does obviously have a number of citizens in both countries, have a significant number of troops in Lebanon, is very concerned about the situation in Palestine. So there's quite a lot of moving parts in this.
Kaya Kallas, during a debate yesterday on whether the EU should continue with this association agreement with Israel, she was criticised because she refused to refer to what's happening in Gaza as genocide. Do you think she should have used that word?
So it's not for me to tell Kaya what to say, but I'm very clear it's genocide. Different member states will have different views, and she's probably trying to represent the European Union as a whole. But my view is very clear that we're seeing genocidal activity in Gaza. And my most particular concern in relation to Palestine and Gaza right now is I expected to be going to a foreign affairs meeting on Sunday and Monday of this coming week. And I expected the focus of that meeting to be on the review of the association agreement and what we could actually do from a practical sense, finally, to take action to try and put more pressure on Israel in terms of ending the genocide in Gaza. Now, obviously, it's highly likely that that meeting is going to end up being dominated by Iran and Israel. So we cannot take the focus off Gaza while all of this is going on too. And that's a point I'll be making strongly.
Okay. Let's move on now to housing, because the Minister, James Brown, was on Morning Ireland earlier. I presume you have confidence in him, but do you think he's inspiring confidence amongst the public that he's the man to solve the housing crisis?
Well, of course I have confidence in him, and can I say it's not just about him or anybody else, it's about the whole of government pulling all of the policy levers available to get back the momentum that the central bank rightly talked about this morning when I heard Robert Kelly of the central bank on Morning Ireland. Like, we'd gotten to a point with housing where we had seen a very significant increase in supply over the last number of years, and then it's plateaued. And the job of this government and the job we're working on day in, day out, is to get that momentum back. And what I take some heart from in the comments of the central bank today is the issues that they're highlighting very publicly in their report are the issues that we're working on in the here and now.
Yeah,
issues around planning.
But you're saying you're going to miss targets again and again and again up to 2027. It's so dispiriting for people to hear that.
I think we have to be a little bit cautious on that, though, because Robert Kelly actually said it's not impossible to meet the targets over the next 3 years, though there's clear challenges. But he also outlined very clearly what he thought needed to be done. And when I say he, what the central bank thinks needs to be done to make them. The commitment in the programme for government is clear. Over 300,000 new homes by the end of 2030. That's the North Star. That's where we have to get to. And as a result of that, we're making a series of decisions to try and get momentum back. Now, I think every single one of those decisions, I fully expect this, every single one of those decisions are going to be critiqued. Many of those decisions might be deemed unpopular. All of those decisions looked in isolation will miss the point here. It's about putting together all of the pieces of the jigsaw to be able to ramp up supply. And I'm somewhat encouraged, actually, that some of the measures we've taken in recent days will make a real difference.
But you've got to be very careful of that target, because if you're carrying a miss into the next general election, you will not be forgiven for it.
Well, I think the most important thing is that we go into the next general election and forget elections. The most important thing is that we have lots more homes for our people to buy. Mm-hmm. We went into the last general election with a significant increase in houses on the previous time. And we have to do that again. We have an opportunity here. And some of the focus now has to be on the blocks to speeding up housing construction. Things like the planning system. We made big decisions on that this week, commencing Commission Planola. Things like water infrastructure, energy infrastructure. I had a very good meeting with Ishka Aaron. They've now given me great confidence that if we provide them with extra money, possibly as soon as next month in the National Development Plan, they can very significantly ramp up serviced sites from a water and wastewater point
of
view.
Will you do that?
Yes, absolutely. We have to do that. I mean, I think water, wastewater, energy, and zoned land are some of the biggest constraints.
And transport, according to Sean O'Driscoll, who was in with us, the chair of the ESRI.
I heard that. I thought that was a very good interview. But again, the reason Sean O'Driscoll, I think one of the reasons Sean O'Driscoll may have been in with you is because of the key role we've put Sean O'Driscoll in, because the decisions we've made in the last couple of weeks to bring in expert voices like Sean O'Driscoll and others to outline very clearly the practical steps they want taken. And as he rightly says, it's up to us then to take them.
Exactly. He's very wary of that, you know, of putting a report together with the Infrastructure Task Force, and it's sitting there and people not being brave enough who can take the practical action to make it happen.
Now is the time for big, brave, bold decisions. There's no doubt about that. In fact, quite frankly, there's no alternative. And that's why we've made decisions this week on the rent pressure zones that are not without criticism. It's why we've made decisions on extending planning permissions.
They're very messy and they're very confusing. I mean, even your own, I saw reports at the weekend, your own colleagues in government didn't understand them and a journalist had to explain to them the implications of them.
Well, I met my own colleagues last night at my parliamentary party, so I'm quite sure they do understand them. But you are right to make the point.
Do they though? I mean, did they make the point to you that they're confusing?
No, but they would make the point, or in fact, I would make the point, that the rental market in and of itself, there's complexity to this. And this isn't about magic wand solutions. Mm. This is about actually having to look at how you take a balanced approach. Remember, there are listeners listening to this now right across the country who are protected by rent pressure zones. Those rent pressure zones were due to disappear at Christmas if we didn't take action this week. There are people in Donegal today listening to this who are now going to have rent protections probably as soon as the end of the week that they didn't have last week.
I just think you're selling a bit of a pop there, because what you're going to see is rents increasing. You know, the inter-tenancy cap, as Rory Hearn said this morning for the Social Guard, that's gone now.
Well, I think he's, quite frankly, if we're quoting Rory Hearn, I think he's selling a bit of a pop here, because let's remember this. At the moment, we've made a decision that every existing tenant actually has a rent protection continue. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case.
Until you move or your tenancy ends.
I'd say Rory Hearn would have been shocked that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil brought forward no-fault eviction bans in terms of that too. So we've made a very significant moves to increase security of tenure. But let's be truthful, there's no point living in airy fairy land here. If we're talking about hypothetical renters paying hypothetically more rent in hypothetical apartments that don't yet exist, we have to build more, particularly apartments. That's where we've seen the numbers completely collapse. And if we don't take the decisions now, you're talking about big, bold, brave decisions, the Sean O'Driscoll challenge. If we don't take them now, we'll be having academic discussions about how much rent people pay when simply people won't have somewhere to rent.
These measures are about increasing investors coming into the market to build these things for rent. People don't want to rent them. They want to own their own homes.
No.
And you're pursuing this strategy, and we know the outcome will be increased rents and perhaps an increase in supply of apartments to rent that people don't want. They want homes that they can live in.
They want both.
For long term.
I mean, firstly, let's dispel any myth that private investment and significant increase in private investment isn't needed in the housing market. I mean, the Housing Commission, which the opposition very quickly adopted as their mantra, the Housing Commission is very clear on this. We need to see very significant increased private investment. I mean, surely nobody's believing that the only people who should invest in housing in Ireland is the government of Ireland. I mean, that's not how we work
in
this country.
That's not, but you're missing my
point. So we have to invest
more.
People
do not want long-term rental properties. You know that. You know that the figures are there. 87% of renters between 25 and 49 want to own their own home.
And I want people to own their own home, and home ownership is hugely important.
So why make it more attractive for investors to come in to build, buy, to rent?
Just let me make this point, because more people bought their first home last year in Ireland than any year since 2007. Now that gets lost in this debate. More first home buyers last year than any year since 2007. Fact, right? But there will be people who need to rent too. We need a functioning rental market. I mean, we're surely not suggesting we shouldn't have a functioning rental market. There will always be people who need to rent too. There will be always people who want to rent for short term. There's also now an increased number of people looking for cost rental, where they actually do want to rent somewhere for a significant period of time. There's people who come into our country to work in our public service, to work in our hospitals. There's students, there's workers who travel around the country.
But the big investors are not interested in renting to people who are doing cost rental.
We do need, no, that's the role of the Land Development Agency, but we do also need a functioning rental market. Of that, there's no doubt. What we crucially need, though, is a mix of supply. More homes for people to buy, absolutely. Mm-hmm. More apartments for people to buy, and yes, more stock for people to rent.
But rents will go up under this plan.
Well, you see, rents for existing renters will stay the same. But are you asking, will rents be higher for new apartments that don't yet exist than they would be otherwise? Perhaps yes, but the apartments wouldn't exist otherwise, Claire.
Mm-hmm. But once you break your agreement, and we know the tenancies last between 1 and 3 years, so the 6 years really doesn't come into play for many people. Once you break your tenancy and move on, your rent is going to be higher than it was before this plan was put in place.
Well, we're offering people 6 years now, which I think will be interesting to see how that culturally changes things as well. There will be 6 years before rent can be reset. It doesn't affect existing tenants at all. I think that's important to say. But I am a little concerned this week that the only way we can help renters apparently is through the rent pressure zones. Like, there's been no talk about the renter's tax credit that we very significantly increased. And let me be very clear, we're going to need to embed that in our budgetary process.
So government very difficult for people to claim that. you know, and people were having to hand over information that they weren't comfortable about handing over.
I mean, if you're going to get a tax credit, obviously your tenancy has to be registered. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good use of taxpayers' money. But we do need to, I suppose the point I'm making today is I'm conscious there's people out there paying high rents. I'm conscious the cost of living crisis is real for people. The point I'm making to people is let's not look at every decision in isolation. There's many ways this government will help people with the cost, including the cost of rent. Renters' tax credit being one, extending rent pressure zones being another. We can't just view the totality of the challenge people face through any one measure. We have to look at things
in the
round.
So you're asking people to put up with rent increases that are going to come down the tracks from these measures, because ultimately you will achieve what will be for the good of everybody, as in increased supply, but there'll be a bit of pain on the way.
I think there's nothing in relation to housing. The housing situation is already extremely painful for people. And I think there is no easy solutions here. But I do think objectively this is a balanced package. And I reckon if you and I were having this chat last year and we were talking about extending rent pressure zones nationwide, we were talking about bringing in legislation in terms of no-fault evictions, you might have said, come on, Simon, you're never going to do that. That's what we have done. It is a balanced package. And everything needs to be looked at in the round. And the next thing, and it is on to the next thing, I expect people now to see a series of further announcements, even between now and the summer recess, to try and get supply going and watch this space in that regard. This is about a series of actions to get momentum back.
Listen, the central bank has also downgraded its forecast for growth now for the domestic economy for the year because of US tariffs and other pressures. So it's around 2%. That's what they say they expect. The programme for government gives the coalition cover based on growth and on economic conditions not to introduce tax cuts or spending increases in that scenario. So can we expect, or do you believe, that we're entering into a new period of tight-fisted budgets?
I actually don't, but I believe we are entering into a period of needing to be kind of very sensible and prudent in relation to the budgetary decisions. So what do I mean by that? We're still in an era of expansionary budgets. We will be able to deliver a budget in October that will be able to invest more in public services, more in housing, and help people with the day-to-day. But there are dark clouds on the horizon. And I was very honest during the general election debates. I remember saying in RTÉ Studios that the pace at which we introduce new measures, and particularly new tax measures, will obviously be determined by the economic environment we face. I do want to say this to people, though. There's a lot of anxiety out there about trade and tariffs, quite rightly, quite understandably. I had a very good conversation with Donald Trump's trade representative last week, Jemison Greer. I had a very good conversation with the EU Trade Commissioner, Mara Sefcovic, this week. I think we're beginning to see move towards a framework agreement. There's a way to go, many a slip between cup and lip. But I certainly got the sense from my conversation with the US administration last week that there's space now to negotiate and try and find a way forward.
Right. Are you hearing anything about this 10% tariff rate that we might get, just like the UK?
So I am worried about this. So I asked Ambassador Greer, the trade representative, out straight, is 10% the new normal?
Yeah.
And the high level answer is yes, it is, except, and here's the except is important, except where the EU and the US can potentially agree zero for zero. So the EU has put forward a very ambitious set of proposals. We want to do better, quite frankly, than the UK agreement, where we try to reach zero for zero. I also raised pharma because, I mean, pharma is really important to this country. It's important to about 10 European countries, but a lot of people working in pharma in Ireland too. And I was encouraged for the first time that there was a recognition I felt on the US side that the EU, the US, Ireland and the US are more interdependent from a supply chain point of view than perhaps the headline tweets or posts have alluded to date. We need creative solutions is how it was put to me in relation to pharma. And I've linked in with the European Union on that. You know, pharma, there's a chance here to get a deal for pharma that would be good for the EU and good for the US. And that's where a lot of our focus needs to be too.
OK, and will there be a meeting between Donald Trump and Ursula von der Leyen? An official meeting? I know they had a couple of minutes at the G7, but a proper meeting?
I hope so. I truthfully don't know, but my sense is if we watch how President Trump generally conducts his business, my sense is if we get close to a deal or close to an agreement that may be done at that level.
But it won't be part of the negotiation then, is what you're saying?
Certainly, I'd imagine the bulk of the negotiation will be led on an EU side by Mara Sefcovic, on a US side by Howard Lutnick and Jemison Greer. But there may be final matters that get pushed up, if you like, to that level.
And the 9th of July is still the deadline. Is
19 days.
There's no movement on that you sense from your conversations?
No. I mean, my sense from talking to both EU colleagues and the US side is that there is a genuine wish to try and bring a degree of certainty to this by then, because the uncertainty is causing nearly as much challenge. I mean, I meet business people all the time, industry representative groups, who are postponing investment decisions. So it would be highly desirable by the 8th, 9th of July to at the very least get to some framework agreement that can calm things down. Now, that does remain to be seen.
Now, I want to come back to another issue that we have been talking about a lot, and that's nursing homes. I know it was raised in the Dáil during the week. Of course, we had HICWA at the committee hearing yesterday, and the Taoiseach saying that HICWA should use its powers to shut down nursing homes that are breaching care standards. You know the problems that flow from that, though. There often isn't a place for those residents to go when a shutdown order is issued.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, firstly, I agree with the Taoiseach. I mean, HICWA obviously do have powers to close nursing homes. I also recognise, and they do that, by the way, by withdrawing their registration.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. But I do also recognise the practical challenge that that poses, because these are people's homes. I mean, these are places that we entrust to care for our loved ones, and they become somebody's home. And particularly when you get to larger nursing homes, there's obviously a very significant logistical challenge.
Yeah.
So none of this is easy. Mm-hmm. I'm really pleased is the wrong word because I'm utterly disgusted, but I'm really pleased to see the matter be referred to an Garda Síochána, because there's been a lot of talk, and I'm happy to talk about it, but there's been a lot of talk about what more the government needs to do legislatively, what more HICWA needs to do, and we both need to do more. But there's actually also laws that already apply in this land. You can't assault somebody, you can't abuse somebody, and there isn't any law that we need to pass to make that any clearer. If you're taking an elderly man with dementia and rushing him up a corridor and tossing him into a bed, I mean, it is an Garda Síochána that should be investigating that. And I think the Gardaí need to take this, and I'm sure they will take this extraordinarily seriously. We will, in the next month, publish adult safeguarding policy, and we will also give permission to the Minister for Health and the Minister for Older People to draft legislation in relation to safeguarding. I think that's a big thing we can do. I also have to say, and I don't want to be too critical of HICWA here, I mean, I think HICWA have done some good since their development, and there's good people in HICWA. But I was a bit surprised when I was listening to Aoife Hegarty on Morning Ireland in recent days. And she said that HICWA had carried out, since the RT programme, some weekend inspections and evening inspections. But generally, the inspections are Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
And they begin generally between 8 a.m. and 11 in the morning.
There
so you're only seeing one part of the day, and it's very predictable.
And there's no need for... Now, if there's a need for more resourcing, absolutely, we'll help HICWA in relation to that. But, I mean, it seems a bit illogical, and there isn't a need for a law change, that we're not seeing more... inspections that take place at more disruptive times.
Like,
what happens
at night
time?
But there's also the fact they've no financial penalty at their disposal in HICWA. That's a problem. I mean, that means if there's huge logistical problems around taking a licence away and what flows from that, that we've ended up in a situation where private nursing home operators can do what they like.
I think there's three elements to this. I think firstly we have to look at the existing powers that HICWA have and satisfy ourselves that HICWA are using them and are able to use them to their full throttle. I think secondly we have to look at what new powers HICWA need, and then thirdly we need to bring forward a safeguarding policy. I'd add in fourthly, I do think we should have concern, and I certainly have concern about the idea that any one company could have so many nursing homes. I think that exposes the state and our care system to great risk. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes back to maybe your original question to me on this topic. It presents really logistical challenges if HICWA then moves to close it down.
On that. I mean, we've allowed that situation to develop here.
Well, we can certainly take action, in my view, to limit it into the future. And I think that's something we should consider. We also need to look at the development of a statutory home care scheme. At the moment, the only statutory scheme is nursing home care. And when I appointed Kieran O'Donnell as the Minister for Older People, he became the first Minister for Older People to be based in both the Department of Health and the Department of Housing, because we've got to look at other options for people in their communities.
Okay. I'm watching my time here. A couple of quick things to end with. When will your party, Fine Gael, decide on your candidate for the presidency?
So my party will open nominations in July, in early July. We will likely close nominations in mid-July. If there's one candidate, well, that will become apparent at that stage. If there's more than one candidate, this is a matter for our executive council, but if there's more than one candidate, a ballot will take place over the summer and the winner will be announced in early September. So nominations for the Fine Gael presidential nomination will open in early July, close in mid-July, and we take it from there.
And Mairead McGuinness could have a clear run because nobody else seems to be interested. Well, apart from Conor McGregor and Peter Casey.
I could spend a long time commenting on each of them, but I won't. But Mairead McGuinness has certainly not ruled herself out. I don't believe Sean Kelly has ruled himself out either. But you are right. In general, in Ireland now, there seems to be a longer list, not in Fine Gael, but in general, of people who've ruled themselves out than in.
What does that say about the job?
Well, I think it says that being president of Ireland is a job many people would like, but being a presidential candidate perhaps isn't as attractive. But we'll have clarity on our process in July.
And just going back to Iran, what you were saying about the diplomats, our embassy there, is the intention to keep the embassy open in Tehran, or will it be closed now on foot of what's happening?
So I'm monitoring this very closely with our key officials and with European colleagues. The safety of our diplomats is of paramount importance. We will liaise very closely with other European counterparts, and I expect we may have to make further decisions in relation to that in the hours ahead.
Okay. Tánaiste, thanks for coming in. Tánaiste Simon
Harris,
we'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.